Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 103 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley. Thankfully, I'm not on my Todd this week. Jim Knight is back from his little trip to Brighton Beach.
I thought last week was one of our best ones we've ever done.
Angling for another week off, this.
And David Cameron Walker has returned from his Football Manager quiz. Let's not mess around. Let's get straight into it. The big story of the week. Forget your BT Sport buying the Champions League. Forget
a gazillion pounds.
Forget the FA Cup first round. Forget anything like that. The Football Supporters Federation Awards.
Of course. I wonder where this is going. 2013.
The nominees have been announced. And unbelievably, we're on the list. Now, I'm going to try and find this text that I got from you last week, which was something along the lines of, have you seen who's been nominated in capitals? What are we doing on there? So there is 10 categories, 60 nominations, and they have around about 60, and they have a best podcast category. And we're on there. And the thing is, they open it up at this point to a public vote to decide the winner at the Emirates Stadium on Monday the 16th of December, for Podcast of the Year. So this is the bit where we say to you, our loyal listeners, help us out here, because we're up against the giants of the football podcast world. Now, Football Weekly isn't just the biggest football podcast. It's the biggest podcast on iTunes. And they've just plugged in their show, which has come out this week, for people to vote for them.
There's no point then, is there?
So,
if you put it like that, what's the point?
We're as big a fan of Football Weekly. And
in the FA Cup first round week, the week of shocks, and underdogs.
And the Ramble, and all the football podcasts out there. But they don't need your support because they're massive. They've got gazillions of listeners. So you need to vote for us. Jim, ask me how you do it.
Mark, how do you do it?
You go to fsf.org.uk/awards. And you go to, I think it's question 7, I think. Best podcast off the top of my head.
It redirects to like a Survey Monkey page.
Yeah, and then you vote for us on there. And you can vote on every single computer you are near. If you work in an office with 500 computers... and you've got an hour to kill, go around.
That's impressive. I'd like to see that. It's like a world record.
Any students listening?
Oh, yeah. The library.
Pop along to the library. Get more logged on. That'd be good.
Absolutely.
So, although if you can't remember that somewhat long URL, just go on to our Twitter.
Yeah.
At Wagyu Podcast, and you'll find it all there.
Go to your nearest Apple shop and set all the iPads to vote for
us.
Guerrilla marketing.
Let's take
Come
it
on.
Over.
You,
Come on.
And by the way, we're the only non-Premier League podcast
we
on
are,
there.
Yeah.
So that's another reason to vote for us. And you're gonna wear a tux on the night?
I don't know if I wear a tux.
You're going to go...
It is black tie.
Man, you've not even got your shoes on at this point. You're just casually...
It's just the...
So,
the chilled out vibe.
I've got holes in my shoes. So I'm going to buy some new shoes before this ceremony because my feet are wet.
We will.
That's how much we need your votes.
Yeah. We will put in an effort to look good on the night. So one more time, fsf.org.uk/awards.
The thing as well about this award ceremony, without wanting to talk about it too much, is that there's like a player of the year category, isn't there? Like actual proper international superstars such as Robin Van Persie and Juan Mata. Are they going to be there? Am I going to have to deal with the prospect of being drunk in the same room as one of those two?
Drunk in a room with Luis Suarez. That'd be great.
Yeah. We'd have a great chat.
You were drunk in a room with disc jockeys last week and chaos ensued then. So this will be even bigger, wouldn't it? fsf.org.uk/awards. Vote for us. The Audible offer is still available, by the way. You can go to audible.co.uk/going up. Get your free 1 month trial there and free audiobook to walk away with. That's audible.co.uk/going up. So bit of an interesting week this week because there wasn't any League One or League Two games. There was the FA Cup first round, which we will touch on later. But I think we can all agree it's a bit of a quiet week this week.
Yeah.
So in terms of the Championship, there isn't like a one sort of big standout story, is there?
And then you go straight into the international break as well, which makes things quieter still.
So for anyone listening to this podcast for the first time, there's usually bigger stories than this. However, we did think it'd be a good chance to turn our attention to the bottom of the championship, didn't we?
We certainly did.
Okay, right on cue. So we're going to talk about Yeovil because obviously a very sort of a tough job for them to try and stay up this season. They lost 1-0 to the FA Cup holders, Wigan, in the championship on Sunday, and they are bottom of the championship table. 10 defeats in 15 games isn't the best start for the Glovers. 4 points off safety, already looking ahead at a long, hard relegation scrap. Chris Sweet is the sports editor of the Western Gazette, the local paper down there. We had Chris on at the start of the season, and we thought this would be a good point to get him back on for a catch-up. Chris, thank you very much for coming on the show. How would you sum up this start to the season then?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. I think it's been frustrating. I think that they've shown that, well, the Yeovil Town squad have shown that they've got perhaps the quality and the ability to compete in the championship, but every week, almost every week, it's the same old story where they're lacking that killer edge, that sort of bite, tenacity and cleverness in the final third. And, you know, people are saying about how unlucky Yeovil Town have been and how unfortunate they've been. You know, they've been plucky and have done well, but haven't been able to get across that finishing line. And that has been the case, and I think that the game against Wigan, the novelty well and truly wore off. I think that the fans' views were slightly changing from that sort of plucky loser tag to, you know, okay, you're bottom for a reason, and it doesn't matter how good and how snazzy and flash you look in the build up. If you can't stick the ball in the net, then you're going to struggle.
That is interesting, Chris, to know that the fans are perhaps starting to, you know, to feel the, you know, to kind of, there's some unrest starting to build at Yeovil, because surely every Yeovil fan has to have a realistic expectation of what could be possible this season. Yeah. They got promoted, you know, completely unexpectedly. They are with some distance the smallest club in this division. The top goal scorer from last season has been out of the team due to, you know, attitude problems, what we're led to believe from what Gary Johnson has said. So what more can Gary Johnson do? You've had injuries as well to some of the other forward players. So surely they can't get on the manager's back.
Certainly not. No, they'll never get on Gary's back. I think that what he's done at the club in the two spells has been nothing short of miraculous. And you're quite right about what you say about when Yeovil were promoted, that you've got to be, that we're the smallest club to get promoted and have to enjoy the experience and all that sort of thing. But I think also part of the learning curve is how the fans have adapted to life in the Championship. It can be quite frustrating seeing your team go so far, going so near and so close, yet so far away from victory. And I think that, okay, fans, I don't want to say unrest is an appropriate word, really, but I think there's a little bit of discontent. And I think also that it just goes back to that novelty. I think that, you know, most Yeovil Town fans, and myself included, want to see Yeovil Town competing. They want to see them doing well. And when you keep seeing them faltering and falling and losing games for the same reason, there's only so many times you can see that happen.
I can sympathise, I suppose, because if I think to my experience of being a Watford fan when we've been promoted into the Premier League, which I suppose is kind of similar in terms of we were the smallest club in that league at the time, and you know that you don't really deserve necessarily to be there in the grand scheme of things in terms of the clubs you're competing against, but you're there. Yeovil are in the league, and you know the fans will want to see their team win, and there's only so many times you can go to a ground week in, week out and see your team lose home and away, and despite putting in, and that's almost, it almost makes it worse that you're playing well and you're perhaps unlucky and you're getting, you know, last minute goals against you and you can't quite get there. It's so frustrating and it does grind you down. So I can kind of understand that there's only so much fans, you know, can turn up and see their team lose. But just going back to what I think surely it's got to be one of the big problems so far of the season is the goal scoring. You're in single figures this season. You've only got 9 goals. Paddy Madden scored 23 last season. He was largely the reason, really, that Yeovil went up. But he's been out of the team this season. The manager dropped him because he wasn't enjoying his football and had attitude problems. He said he was not up for it.
But he's back now, though, isn't he?
He is back now. He looked better yesterday, but not necessarily quite firing to the Paddy Madden that we knew last year. I think that that Johnson's argument was that in the games that he's played, he hadn't done enough to warrant his place. Now, he's been hauled off already a couple of times after 45 minutes, an hour. And if we think even back as far back as the first day of the season, he only lasted 45 minutes against Millwall before being substituted. And this attitude issue, it's hopefully been resolved. And he's, Gary said that Paddy is looking more up for it. He said it's the expressions, the body language, and his facial expressions in training and things like that. And Paddy wears his hat on his sleeve. He's, I'm more than happy to admit that he's, we had a little Twitter exchange earlier in the season where he maybe didn't quite like something that I wrote reporting what Gary said. And, I think that, he's an emotional lad. He's only, 22, 23. He's still young. He's still learning his game. And I think that maybe for him, the learning curve and the step up has proved steeper than for some of the other members of the squad.
Do you think that any of the squad have been overawed so far? Is it just a case that they're not quite getting the breaks?
I don't think any of them have been overawed. I think that if you look at the way that they particularly at home, have come out and played the likes of your QPRs, your Nottingham Forest, your big guns in the Championship division. They certainly haven't been overawed, and they went to Leeds United last week again, and in front of a crowd of over 25,000, and kept them quiet for 45 minutes, bossed proceedings, and looked very impressive. So, I don't think overall, I don't think they have been overawed. It's a little step up in quality, and I've said it this week a few times that it boils down to a commodity that Yeovil Town haven't really been synonymous with, and that's money and that's finances. I think that, okay, at the start of the season, Gary Johnson, when he signed his contract extension, did so whilst agreeing a budget that he felt could be competitive and could put together a squad. Now, with hindsight, I do wonder if he may think that that budget was a little bit light. But, of course, it's October, and I know that, 4 points is... when he's only got...
I hate to tell you, Chris, it's actually November. So we're one month further on.
Oh, dear. It's been a long season. I think that, being November, I know 15 games is a sizable chunk, but, Yeovil Town have been in this position before in League One, in worse positions in League One, and have got out of it. And I think they'll probably be tapping into that spirit again.
He has brought in a couple of loan players, though, hasn't he? I know. Yeah. Wayne Hennessy and Shane Duffy have both come in.
Yeah, Wayne Hennessy has now gone back. His last game was against Wigan Athletic, and that's a bit of a blow. But, Marek Steck should be fit to face Doncaster Rovers after breaking his hand against Birmingham on the second weekend into the season. But Wayne Hennessy's been absolutely superb. He's been brilliant, a fantastic keeper, Premier League quality, and his attitude as well. He's not afraid to call a spade a spade. And I think that a few of his defenders have had a bit of a verbal battering on times, and it hasn't been unwanted or uncalled for. And Shane Duffy, the Everton centre-half, once again, has been brilliant. He's a Premier League player in the making. The scorelines have reflected badly, may reflect badly or may look badly on Hennessy and Duffy, but that's no reflection on their performances as such, because Duffy's just been superb. He's been a rock. The first thing he did, the first time he really came to prominence in the Yeovil Town shirt was at Bolton Wanderers, where we saw him herring into a 50-50, sort of jogging into it, telling Luke Ayling to back off, and clattered through Mark Tierney. And from that moment in, he thought, yeah, we've got a player here. And he's been superb.
Is there going to be money in January to strengthen, Chris? Because looking at the table, all doom and gloom about the amount of goals scored and, obviously the lack of victories. But you have beat Nottingham Forest a few weeks ago. And so there are, and you beat Millwall on the opening day of the season. So it's obvious that the club are capable of results like that, obviously not consistently enough, but you're not adrift of safety yet.
Well, just touching briefly on the Nottingham Forest game, what that taught everybody at the club was that Yeovil Town need 11 players currently. They need 11 players to be on song and on the top of their game to get a result. And that goes back to what you said about consistency as well, that to have that consistently happening is incredibly draining and perhaps unlikely. But, Gary Johnson, after the game on Sunday against Wigan, was saying, he's already saying about changes he wants to make in January. He wants to bring players in and send some out, perhaps, that he no longer thinks or has decided it aren't Championship quality. And not only is he looking at loans, he says he's looking at making permanent signings. So he's already banging on that boardroom door, I would imagine asking or just inquiring as to what resources will be available to him when the transfer window reopens. So far, the football club the board of directors have backed into the hilt. They always have done. They did in the first spell, they have done in this spell. I wouldn't be surprised if there were a few more resources released. Whether it's sufficient, then I don't know. I suppose there'll be some sort of compromise there. But I wouldn't be surprised if he was allowed a little bit of a free rein, but all within good reason in January. Because the one thing that Yeovil Town have always done is they've always prided themselves on being incredibly cautious with every penny. They've never overspent. They've never, not for a good few seasons anyway, gone over the top with player wages or anything to put them in any sort of financial strife. But that won't happen again, I'm sure. But I wouldn't be surprised if Gary isn't given a bit of a license to go out and recruit.
I mean, you are, as you mentioned there, Yeovil aren't going to be able to pay big wages no matter what money Gary Johnson gets given to him in the transfer window. So it's likely that they're going to be looking at a sort of situation similar to the one where they found Paddy Madden, a player perhaps who's shown potential, at a lower level, League One, League Two, or perhaps you could even look at a club like Peterborough who have, been up in the Championship and are doing well in League One. They've got a great record of signing players in non-league. They've just signed the guy Vassell, who played for Bishop Stortford in the Cup against Northampton yesterday. Now, do you think that Gary Johnson will have his eye on some little diamond in the rough, perhaps from right lower down the leagues that could come in and make an impact?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think if you look at what he tried to do before the summer, in the summer, he brought in Kiefer Moore from Dorchester Town, and he fought off likes of Charlton Athletic and Bolton Wanderers, who are only offering 421s football. Yeovil said to Kiefer Moore, you'll be in the first team squad. And okay, I don't think Kiefer's had anything like the sort of impact that Gary would have wanted so far. But he just shows that he's willing and is, well, he has to really, the money he's got to cast his net a bit further afield. I wouldn't be surprised if he's looking down the leagues. But even then, targeting somebody on a permanent transfer from League One and League Two is still going to be expensive. And what two phrases that Gary uses quite regularly is that he's always on the lookout for Roy the Rovers and also Gary's gambles. And he did that a few times last season and it paid off. Your Paddy Maddens, your Sam Foley's. Sam Foley came from Newport County. He was outstanding last year, played very well against Wigan on Sunday. He's going to have to be one of those picks to spot the lad that's out of favour, that's got a bit of quality or a bit of potential perhaps, and trying to challenge that, because he seems to relish in those sorts of challenges and situations. Without wanting to over egg it too much, and I think he's probably faced with that biggest challenge so far now.
Gary's gamble sounds like some kind of betting column, doesn't it? I should see that in the programme. I'm just looking at the games. The next eight games, right up until the end of the year. Obviously, he's got the players to himself for a week or so now. I imagine most of them. Can't imagine there's too many international call-ups. I might be wrong. The next game is Doncaster on the 22nd, and then you've got, in the next eight games, five teams who are currently in the bottom half of the table.
Yeah.
So it's quite an important little period coming up.
Yeah, indeed it is. And the international call-ups, it's only Shane Duffy. He's being called up for two Republic of Ireland under-21 internationals. I think from what I can gather, the players' training schedule this week is changing, but they'll have a free weekend before coming back on Monday to face Latvia at Hewish Park in a friendly, so that'll be an entertaining evening.
Some eyebrows shot up in the studio here. That's because of Gary Johnson's connections, yeah?
Exactly that, yeah. He's still in touch with the Latvian FA. It's Marian Pahas, the former Southampton chap who Gary sort of helped bring over here to Southampton.
He needs to find the new Marian Pahas, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's
not
wrong. He focuses scouting search in Latvia, doesn't he, to find one of Gary's gambles.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. I don't know if the net goes that far. They've got to pay for the airfare to get the scouts over there. But, I think you say about the games coming out, Doncaster Rovers a week on Friday at Doncaster Rovers. That's when that's a big game. It's a huge game. Barnsley away as well coming up. And well, you've worked out how many teams Yeovil are facing in the coming games in the bottom half. It just shows the standard of challenge that Yeovil have faced already. As I said, QPR, Reading, these big sides that that should be looking for top six promotion spots. And you know, the Yeovil have unsurprisingly come up short, perhaps. But it really is. You know, the business. You know, the business starts now, and that problem about goal scoring has got to resolve itself. And you said about only scoring nine or so goals. The Yeovil Town strikers have only contributed one of those, and that's the James Hayter penalty against Leicester City when they were already 2-0 down. Yeovil Town's top scorer is midfielder Ed Upson. He scored five of them and was suspended for the Wigan game. And it just seems, I mean, we keep going back to it. It just, you know, need hit the net, need to find their feet in the final third. And yeah. I think that also goes back to the little bit of the little murmurings of discontent among the fans, because it's a Gary Johnson side, and Gary Johnson's sides are known for scoring goals.
Yeah, because the defence has been it's not been too bad. I mean, if you look at their other, you've conceded less goals, for instance, than a team as high as Derby. But just to look at the bigger picture, what does this sort of championship season mean for Yeovil? Is it simply going to be one season where they fight hard against relegation, go down, and then that's it, back to League One for the foreseeable? Or can Gary Johnson and the people at the club actually lay some foundations with the increased finance they have this year and try and make, you know, Yeovil a team that we may see more regularly at this level, similar to the likes of Peterborough, Doncaster, who have kind of flirted in between the two divisions over the last few seasons?
I think the fairest comparison would probably be Scunthorpe United, who are obviously, you know, League Two now, but have in the recent past had a relatively decent spell in the Championship. I think they're similar sort of size clubs with similar sort of resources even now. But I think if Yeovil Town were to survive in the Championship, that would be widely accepted. That would be the biggest achievement in the club's history. It would surpass last May at Wembley. Relegation would be incredibly, incredibly disappointing. It'd be the first time that the club's been relegated since, I believe, 1994. So, you know, recent history has been particularly good for Yeovil Town. No two ways about it. And Gary Johnson doesn't want that relegation on his CV. None of the players do. And, you know, Gary said that perhaps, you know, the group he's got now would be an excellent, you know, that they would be. You know, the side that Yeovil Town have got now would be very impressive, I think, in League One. But we don't want to contemplate that. We want to make sure that, you know, they want to stay in the Championship. And as you say, I think if they do stay up, you know, this season, then, you know, their finances would be bolstered even further for next year. You know, the business plan and the business sort of preparation would allow them to kick on again. And, you know, you're just going to have to take it season by season. But I said at the start of the season, and I said in the summer, I think that Yeovil Town will stay up. I'm still confident that they will. But I think these next few weeks and next few months are going to be vitally important when they're playing the likes of Barnsley and Doncaster Rovers.
Nice bit of positivity to end. Chris, thanks for coming on. We appreciate that. That is Chris Sweet, who is the sports editor of the Western Gazette. And right now, it's time for the latest in our My Club series. It is the 125th anniversary, if I could say it, the Football League this season. So we're giving supporters of clubs 125 seconds to tell us about their club. And today, it's all about Wickham Wanderers.
This is We Are Going Up. My club in 125 seconds.
Hello, I'm Dan Simpson, and my club are Wickham Wanderers.
Dan, what is your favourite ever memory of watching Wickham?
Oh, it's going to have to be, we got to the semi-final of the League Cup, the Carling Cup it was at the time, and Jermaine Easter scored an equaliser against Chelsea to make it 1-1, and we took them to their place, Stamford Bridge, but then got smashed 4-0. So definitely the equaliser.
Dan, you sound a relatively young fan, so I don't know if you'll be able to answer this question, but where were you when Roy Essendoe scored that famous goal for you in the FA Cup?
Yeah, that's, you mentioned Wickham, and that's all anyone ever brings up. I wasn't there. I was at home listening to it with my dad on the radio.
What's your favourite goal that you've witnessed in person being a Wickham fan?
I would say we were about to get relegated a few seasons ago. We were away at MK Dons, who are a franchised club and kind of rivals. And in the last minute, Kevin Betsy, who'd just come back to the club, kind of a club hero, scored in the 94th minute to make it 3-2, and we won. And that was we still got relegated, but it was a pretty big moment.
Your favourite Wickham Wanderers kit?
Well, they're all the same. They all look exactly the same. The one at the moment, actually, so we're sponsored by Samsung, which is a huge thing, and I think it got voted to one of the sexiest kits ever by some random website, so I definitely go for the one we've got at the moment.
Isn't your away kit like Barcelona's this season?
It's Barcelona. Oh, yes, it
tequila
is.
Tequila sunrise, away kit.
Absolutely.
Well, we do play a lot like Barcelona, so there's something there, I think.
Okay, and final question. How are you going to get on this season?
Well, I don't want to get promoted because I don't think the club can financially support it.
Boring.
Live the dream. Come on.
We're going to win the league. We're going to win the league, and then we're going to win the next league, and Champions League 5 seasons time. That's
good
what,
stuff.
That's what's going to happen.
Dan, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
So we'll have another one of those on the show next week on its international weekend. So a very quiet sort of week or two in the Football League. However, there was a full round of programmes in the Championship this weekend. Jim, we had a big chat about Leicester and their excellent home form on the show last week. You were there at the KP on Saturday.
I was.
The big East Midlands derby. Probably the game of the weekend in the Championship. Leicester 0, Nottingham Forest 2. Massive derby day disappointment in the end.
Yeah, it was a pretty gutting defeat. More the manner of the performance than the result itself, because Forest were very good.
Were they?
They took their chances
highlights,
well,
you
know, I
like
think.
You could have been 3 or 4 0 up by the time they scored.
Yeah, although I think Carl Darlow only really made a couple of good... I don't think we made enough of the... What you don't see on the highlights is how much possession we had and how little we did with it, especially second half, I think, because you expect... I mean, I'm sure we've all been in this situation numerous times where your team go in a couple of goals down at half-time and you expect this kind of rousing response. There was absolutely minimal response second half until that penalty. And that really is the only time we had a shot on goal, I think, in the second half. And it was quite disappointing. I think I got that sinking feeling when I realised that Chris Wood was on his way to play for New Zealand in the international games, because you've got to be there a certain amount of times before. And because he's got to fly, you know, 58 hours or whatever it is around the globe to go and play for New Zealand in their World Cup playoff, he couldn't play. Jamie Vardy still not fit. So we started with Jeffrey Schlupp.
So New Zealand playing Uruguay?
No, New Zealand playing Mexico.
Oh, right, okay. Well, I was going to say Luis Suarez against Chris Wood would have been.
Uruguay playing Jordan.
Yes, I think so.
Is that right?
I think they get the group from that.
But yeah, disappointing. And David Nugent did miss quite a few chances there in the penalty as well.
Yeah, he had a bit of an average day by his own high standards. The penalty miss just kind of summed it up, really. He looked very confident, kind of stepping up and giving the keeper a bit of verbals and then promptly blasted it into... You know,
What did you make of Forest?
I thought they were good. I think, you know, as good as value as they were for the win, I think if they play like that against a lot of teams, they'll get beaten. If that makes sense. So on our day, as Dave said, we could have beaten them.
And the goals were spectacular, really.
They were, you know, the first one, it's a little bit of kind of miscommunication in the back line, because I think it's Danny Drinkwater goes to clear the ball. Kasper Schmeichel's coming out thinking he's going to clear out the defenders, and it kind of ricochets to Jamie Mackey. The second one, again, it's a little bit of scrambled goals, but if they score their two chances, you know, it's clinical at the end of the day. You can't argue with that. Whereas we kind of had 6 or 7 attempts.
And Jamie Mackey, who I had in my fantasy team, and I think he's done nothing all season, took him out on Friday.
And then probably scored
and settled the first one with a little knockback. Elsewhere then in the Championship of the weekend, QPR that point away at Reading, with Danny Guffery completely, by the way, he's got the most ridiculous haircut. Yeah.
What is he doing?
Like Travis Bickle, isn't he?
Completely turning his back on that free kick. I hate it when people who are kind of in the wall or on the end of a wall do that. Joey Barton firing it in. So a point apiece at the Majeski. That was the early game on Saturday. Elsewhere at the top of the Championship, Blackpool surprise home defeat to Ipswich, who got their first away win of the season. And I suppose it'd be quite good for the Ipswich fans to finally have it all sorted with Mick McCarthy staying there now.
Speculation,
because
I mean,
he was
odds on favourite at one point, and promptly did an interview where he said he'd been linked to plenty of jobs that he'd been odds on for and never even like been interested or submitted his CV or whatever. So I think good for them to get that wrapped up, because that is a bit
McCarthy
of a cloud
has a CV
over.
Do you think he actually has one?
I'm sure
that lists all the clubs. How far does he go back? First job? That's always a question.
They always say try and
CV.
Fit
you put the retail experience on there just in case.
They always say trying to fit your CV on 2 pages, don't they? So I wonder how most football managers
do it. Wow, I'd go for 1 page approach myself.
Interesting. Let us know your thoughts at Wagyu Podcast.
Also liking Mick McCarthy's beard at the moment.
Yes.
I think that works for him.
I think so, definitely. What about Watford? DC.
What about him?
2-2 draw at Middlesbrough last Saturday.
Equaliser.
That Ayala
annoying.
Had an interesting game, didn't
annoying.
He? Daniel Ayala for Middlesbrough.
And we shot ourselves in the foot again, really. We got back into the game after conceding what I thought was a pretty poor goal, actually, the first one. People were saying it was a good finish, but Almunia beating too easily at his near post. It was good to see Deeney and Forestieri both scoring. Forestieri's been really good this season, hasn't he's scored a few, but sometimes been unlucky. And Deeney hasn't been at his best, but he set up the second goal, scored the first, and you know it was a good 90 minutes for him. But we did what we've been doing all too often this season, and that's gave away possession needlessly in the last minute. Middlesbrough subsequently got a corner from the result on possession, and another thing we've been doing too often is conceding from set pieces. Iola came up with a header in the last minute, and it's a 2-2 draw. Feels like a defeat, really. Isola was bitterly disappointed after the final whistle, and again, it's just, I mean, just when we thought we were going to get a win, we would have been back in the playoffs, we draw, and then Reading all of a sudden are back in this thick spot, and we're seventh still. So, you know, like I said last week to you on the phone, it's not all doom and gloom, but automatic promotion is a bit of a stretch for us now unless we go on a real big run. We're in the playoff picture and we need to improve. But we signed George Thorne towards the end of last week on loan from West Brom, who I'm led to believe by a few West Brom fans on Twitter is a reasonably tough tackling, good, promising central midfielder, which is what I think we may have been missing in recent weeks. So he should be a good signing for us, hopefully.
Jimmy, you had your hand up there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask DC. It's the first time I've seen him since the Leicester game. And the one thing, because obviously that's one of the first times I've seen this season, what for the full 90 minutes. Mm. And compared to the playoff games that we watched last season, how easily they gave the ball away in midfield. And I don't know why that is. It because of a change in formation, a change of approach, a change of personnel?
It's not a change of formation.
Because Zola's always been a ball-playing manager in terms of the philosophy he wants his teams to have.
We're playing the same system, and there are some people... just been listening to the From the Rookery End podcast on the way here, and they're calling for a change of formation, and I'm not sure whether that is necessarily the best thing for us, but certainly if you look at that midfield, three of the players who played in that semi-final against Leicester, Nathaniel Chalabar, Alwyn Abdi and Jonathan Hogg, two have left the club, one's out for the foreseeable future and hasn't played since August, so that's one of the reasons we're not as good in midfield, and we are trying to play the same way, but we just aren't doing it as well at the moment. That's a simple issue. We're giving the ball away far too often.
Ross McCormack. Oh,
four goals.
What a performance.
What's the technical term for four goals?
I don't know.
A haul?
I think it is a haul, isn't it? Four goals, including a free kick, and did he score a penalty as well?
No,
penalty and a free kick.
A tremendous free kick, wasn't it?
Oh, what a goal. And that Cameron Stewart.
That was good.
A goal the first in that game for Charlton.
Another poor pitch, though, Charlton.
Jim was saying this before.
I mean, this may be a stupid question.
Everybody.
This may be a very stupid question because Charlton's ground is called the Valley, but is it actually that far down? Does it just collect water? Because we were talking about this before the pod.
I think it is down like a hill,
but
I think, from memory. We've got a lot of Charlton fans who listen, though, so they're probably
surely,
able to put us right.
If you've got a Championship ground, do you not get slightly better drainage, or what's the situation? Is it just a natural thing where you literally cannot help that if you get a deluge of water?
The Doncaster game, wasn't it, which was called off earlier in the season.
After like half time, wasn't it? Or just before half time.
Yeah,
and there were a couple of goals down, weren't they? And it was pretty galling.
Brian McDermott's starting to get things together at Leeds, though.
They're just outside
the playoffs now.
I just googled lowest football league ground below sea level.
Is it Charlton?
I'm just trying to find out.
Lowest
elevation. This is from
DC's report.
Not necessarily.
I think
it's from KGBanswers.co.uk.
Good.
Brilliant.
We don't want the lowest Russian secret service crash.
Slow over
Russia.
There in Russia at the moment. They're answering questions like this rather than doing some spying. apparently, it's Blundell Park, home to Grimsby Town.
Now, that's not football league ground anymore, though.
Yeah,
how out of date is this?
Where's the KGB?
It's
back in the good old days.
Canvey Island's quite low.
Right.
The highest is in Peru.
Ross McCormack scored four goals and Leeds won away to get back to
he's now the top scorer in the division.
I think that was their first away win as well for quite a while, wasn't it? Their home form has been covering together quite a lot, but it's the away form that's been letting them down, so that's a real positive sign for
a few more Championship things to round up. Five wins in seven for Bolton now, starting to turn a corner, aren't they? They got a 3-1 victory against Millwall at the Reebok. They've brought in Joe Mason on loan from Cardiff, a player who did very well in this division.
Speaking of loan players as well, I saw earlier Michael Jacobs has gone to Wolverhampton Wanderers from
cracking
Derby.
Signing.
Thanks. The Jeff Stelling role there. Michael Jacobs has gone. I'm interested to see how he gets on, because whenever I spoke to Ben, our Northampton blogger and kind of fan who comes on regularly to talk to us about Cobblers, he was raving about Jacobs, and then he made the step up last season to Derby, but obviously he might struggle to get in there, I'm guessing, with Will Hughes kind of dominating that position in midfield. He's only going to get kind of scraps, but I'll be interested to see how he gets on at League One level, because he's always been a very highly rated player from everyone that I've spoken to him about. So,
speaking of Derby, you've got an interesting story about one of their players from the weekend who decided to drive to the ground.
Oh yeah, I was wondering what you were talking about then. I was like, no, it was not in Derby this weekend.
This
Andre Wisdom.
Andre Wisdom,
on loan from Liverpool. I'm sure DC's seen this.
utterly astonishing.
So he's obviously not familiar with the East Midlands.
Well, how long has he been there?
Not very long. Right, I think this is going to be his first game. So I think he's obviously not been to the ground before. I'm guessing he's been to the training ground. So he's driving to the ground for the game.
Right, okay.
So I'm guessing they must train off-site somewhere, probably not very close to...
This is Pride brilliant,
Park,
by the way, everyone.
It's in the middle of an industrial estate, Pride Park, so you can't kind of get a training ground near there. Anyway, so he's driving to the ground and he puts his the postcode into his posh sat-nav on his, I think it's a Porsche.
It is a Porsche.
It drops him in what I can only describe as a swamp. And he has to be
it's incredible,
rescued.
Isn't it?
The club had to send someone to pick him up, didn't they?
He signed on the 22nd of October. So I don't know if he may have played a few games already.
How has he messed that up then?
If anyone out there follows me on Twitter and happens to be up regularly in the week at the hours of about 4:30, 5 a.m. in the morning, you'll know I've got issues with sat navs
and taxi
drivers that use them and fail to know where they're going. And this is a very similar situation for Andre Wisdom. I mean, all right, it's one thing to follow the sat nav. I can understand if you're a Premier League footballer new to the area and you're in the outskirts of rural Derbyshire for some reason, you don't know where Pride Park is. Right, bang
might
it in
still
the
be driving down from Merseyside.
Bang it in the sat nav, exactly. Bang it in the sat nav, and you'll get there in the end. Fine, but this has led him up the woodland path. Not the garden path.
No.
And it's not even a road. It's like a little dirt track. And he's thought, right, I'm on the dirt track.
Also, it's been raining. What do you think's going to happen?
The alarm bell should have been ringing when you're in the forest, Andre. Surely you know that the ground is
when
in
you're
a
on the outskirts of Centre Park
urban area.
It's a big pool.
And
of
then,
pressure.
Having done all that, he's still not thought. You know, the turn back. He sees this big, huge, muddy swamp bog sort of thing. Drives his, you know,
80 grand
very
Porsche
very expensive
into it.
Porsche straight into the middle of it and gets trapped.
Can we tweet this picture, please?
Tweet it from the Wagyu account.
If you haven't seen
it. Well publicised.
It's
so
brilliant.
If not seen it.
At Wagyu Podcast on Twitter.
But apparently he went back and got the car and it's all fine.
Of course he did. What's he expecting? He's not going to leave that
there,
to the swamp people, is he? They're going to be
the swamp people.
Yep. You don't know what goes on in Derbyshire. Tell you stories.
John Ryan, the Doncaster chairman, has resigned from his position over boardroom unrest. It's a football term, isn't it?
Well, there's been a lot of boardroom unrest, hasn't there?
Took over the club in 98. They've won four promotions, the Johnston's Paint Trophy, and returned to the second tier.
Absolutely.
First time in 50 years under his stewardship.
Yeah. I mean, he said that he ranks himself up there as probably, you know, he doesn't think anyone else has achieved as much as he has at the club, and I think he's fair to say that. And from what I was reading, I've read about this on Saturday when I heard that he'd resigned, he's been trying to bring in some people to invest in the club, push them on further. I think he said about £10 million perhaps, which could, you know, give them a real chance of pushing
massive,
on. Yeah. Who knows, getting into the playoffs maybe of that sort of money. But what it seems like is that the board there at Doncaster have sort of poo-pooed the idea at first of these people coming in, and then have subsequently gone behind his back and gone straight to them, to these investors, and
right,
tried to get them in, you know, with a, you know, different sort of deal, and it looks like they've tried to cut John Ryan out of the deal. That's just my sort of brief reading of the situation from reading a few bits and bobs. I'm sure it's much more complicated than that. But John Ryan has said, "Well, fine, you go ahead and you get it done. You do it on your own. I'll step back. I'll get out of the way. I won't complicate things. And if it can progress forward and they can get some new investment, then that's surely a good thing for Doncaster." But John Ryan, you know, has been there for a long time. Has done a good job. So perhaps there might be a bit of concern that he's leaving as well.
Worth following Liam Hoden and Glenn Wilson, the Doncaster guys we've had on before, on Twitter if you don't already, for more information on that story. Now, it was the FA Cup first round this weekend, but you've not really got any interest in it, have you, DC, by the sounds of it?
It's left me cold, really.
Okay.
I don't see too much romance of the cup at
the
moment.
Well, in fact, there's only two Football League sides who were beaten by non-league opposition at the weekend. One of them was Cheltenham Town, who've had a really poor season, actually, having got to the playoffs the last few years so far. They lost 1-0 at Tamworth to a goal from Nick Chadwick, formerly of Everton, who's on loan there from Plymouth at the moment. But, you know, undoubtedly the upset of the round was League One Swindon, who, don't forget, not took QPR in the League Cup early this season, getting absolutely tanked 4-0 at Macclesfield. So much so that Mark Cooper and the players, well, I don't know if this is him who's sort of made this happen or the players have volunteered it, they're all going to chip in.
It's definitely Cooper.
They're all going to chip in and pay for the fans that went up to watch that horror show. And there were some ridiculous goals they conceded. Where did that result come from for Swindon?
I'm not sure. Like, they've obviously taken cup competition seriously in recent years. As you said, they beat QPR.
Played Chelsea, didn't they, this season?
Exactly.
In the League Cup.
You know, they put out a strong team. So I don't know whether it was just a case of them. Did they underestimate Macclesfield? Obviously they did, to the point where they got
Second year in a row they've lost to Macclesfield in the FA Cup, apparently. So
it's a bizarre situation, isn't it? But it's one of those weekends that throws up the odd result like that. But they'll be bitterly disappointed with that. No wonder they're refunding all the fans.
Speaking of bizarre decisions, yeah, what Egg Davids has been up to.
Wearing the number one shirt outfield, crime number one.
Playing himself up front.
Quite
about
literally.
This Saturday.
Yeah, he literally plays where he wants now at Barnet.
Preston 6, Barnet 0.
Turns up when he wants. Plays where he wants.
David's playing himself
up front.
He's a total
footballer. He is. He's played at centre back. He's played all over the
place. He's a maverick, isn't he?
Yeah.
But it's all very well playing himself up front, but he didn't even get on the score sheet.
No, he didn't.
6-0.
Leonard John.
Do we know? Hang on a minute. I'm going to stick up for Decker David here.
Go on, here we go.
This is Barnet. They might not have a big squad. Maybe their strikers are injured. I don't know.
That's true. Nothing can. He's still wearing the number one shirt.
Oh, get over it. People annoy me these days. Everyone, like. It doesn't matter, does it? Does it matter?
Yeah,
oh,
I think
God,
it does.
Does it matter? No,
I think it does.
It makes no difference
I think
to
it
anything.
Does. You can't have someone.
If he wants a number 150 on his back, why not? What difference does it make to you in the game?
No, it just looks wrong.
Oh, it doesn't look wrong. Just get over it.
It looks wrong. When you have a centre forward,
I should never said
Steve Morrison, who played up front for Norwich last season, wearing number 5.
There's loads of examples, isn't there? Like William Gallagher wearing number 10, Asamoah Gyan wearing number 2 or number 3 for Sunderland. Top for them.
I was going to say, Lenno John Lewis missed his customary couple of sitters on hosting the Grimsby highlights. We also had...
Lenno John Lewis, his name is...
These are players that we don't get to talk about anymore. Because
they wear that T-shirt.
They've left the football league. I don't know where it is. Paul Gallagher hat-trick for Preston.
Paul Gallagher. We could have done with him.
Paul
scoring
Gallagher.
Penalties.
I was talking about Paul Gallagher today.
Were you?
Did you know Sven-Göran Eriksson's come out in one of these interviews he's doing to plug his new book and said that, I don't know if this is in the book or whether this has just come up in conversation, but he said that Paul Gallagher, when he was working at Leicester City, had as good an ability with a dead ball as David Beckham.
He was.
And I was sticking up for Gallagher. Someone said this to me. Oh, what's Sven saying? This is always a bang average player. And I said, well, he may well have had a bang average career and has gone around the houses, but I've seen him score a few belters against Watford.
He's capable of brilliant goals.
When he wants to, he can manipulate a ball from a dead ball situation extremely well.
Well, putting this into a bit of perspective, he scored penalties routinely for Leicester and free kicks from everywhere.
Could have done with one penalty
on
Saturday.
Exactly, and that's the point. And that's the reason David Nugent's now on pens, because he's not with us anymore. I think for Leicester it's more the case of attitude a little bit, injuries a little bit, and kind of him then wanting away and going out on loan and us. But he was on big wages as well when we brought him in from, I think it was Blackburn. We paid
well
a huge sum of money.
So. Well done to Hartlepool again, who knocked out Notts County. Difficult start for Sean Derry, who's gone in there. What do you make of that appointment? Sean Derry going in at Notts County.
It's an interesting one, isn't it?
It's a surprise, isn't it? He's 35 years old. What's actually quite bizarre about the situation is he's been named as player manager, but he can't actually play this season because he's already played.
Isn't he registered someone else?
He's already played for two clubs.
Right.
Played for QPR and Millwall this season. You're not allowed to play for three clubs in a season.
Hadn't he only just gone to Millwall as well a few weeks ago?
It was towards the start of the season. He had played a few games. But, I've had the opportunity to work with Sean Derry a few times.
Mm.
And he's a very nice guy, and he comes across as someone who's quite thoughtful, and I know he's done most of his coaching badge. I'm not sure if he's done all the way up to the A licence yet. I may be wrong, but he's certainly been on his coaching courses for a while, and he's been a good servant to many clubs, hasn't he? Palace, he was there for a long time, Leeds, QPR, and he's well liked at QPR, a hard working player. So he's quite a reasonably well liked person within the game from a number of clubs. But it's a gamble, isn't it? When you give a young manager a try like this, it's always going to be a gamble. You never know which way it's going to go. And as we mentioned when we did Notts County a few weeks ago, they've had a mixed record, to say the least, with appointing managers over the last few years. And the County fans will be hoping that this is certainly one that will pay off. I mean, he started his career at Notts County. He was a Notts County supporter as a kid. That sometimes can work in your favour. That will hopefully maybe give him a bit more lenience with the fans, and he's got Greg Abbott with him as well, who he worked with when Abbott was at Leeds, I think, in the academy when Sean Derry was there, and they knew each other and got on well there. So he's got somebody with a bit of experience alongside him, which can only be a good thing for him. So we'll just wait and see. It's an intriguing appointment, I think.
Good luck to him. Quick update on the We Are Going Up Fantasy Football in the Championship. Fantasy.football-league.co.uk. The pin is 916-3054. Gary Mackay still at the top. Resign or die. Still leading the way. Slackers FC, Jim Stewart Evans. Close by now.
Where am I? I've not looked at my team. I'm going very much with the approach of just pick them and leave them.
You are 50th out of 95 at the moment.
Mid-table mediocrity.
Where are you, Jim? Let's have a look.
I was doing I think
you're
I was,
35. I'm yeah, 37. I'm hot on your heels there.
Slipped down a bit.
Carl's 31. Actually, yeah, I think so. You're bottom, Dave, out of everyone. And quick mention for Sonny Morel, the Red and Blue Army, 95th place at the moment, collecting the wooden spoon. Right, that's just about it for a shortened show this week. Thank you to everyone who has got in touch and said they've voted for us already for the big Football Supporters Federation Awards. Remember, Football Weekly, Football Ramble, the rest of them, they don't need your support.
They've got the game.
I forgot about the game.
Blue Moon.
They've got so many people that listen and so on. So we need your support. We're the only non-Premier League one in there as well. So if you can vote for us,
while you're there, you should also, in my opinion, vote for our good friends, the two unfortunates.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nominated in a couple of categories.
Best independent website.
Similar to us, they're up against some of the big dogs, and they're very worthy of your vote.
Yep. So just takes 2 seconds, and if you do happen to own or sit near about 30 different computers, why not use them? fsf.org.uk/awards, and a reminder about the Audible offer, which is audible.co.uk/going up. So next week it is International Week.
We have some sort of thinking about it. So it's kind of like, you know, like elections where like you can lose like the popular vote but still get into government. This is kind of could be simple. We could actually have
interesting to see where this is going.
Less individual people, like every single listener of the Football Ramble or of Football Weekly could vote just once. But if all of our listeners like vote 10,
it sounds more and more like George W. Bush
election. This is like Florida in 2000.
It's George W. Bush approach, isn't it? Everyone's pet dog that never existed can vote.
This is nothing against any of those other podcasts again, but we would
not.
How good would it to be on that stage with, I think it's James Richardson and Natalie Sawyer at the awards.
Excellent.
Imagine if we were up there
having the award presented by the host of Football Weekly.
Thinking about it, what is he doing up there if he's nominated? That's a story for another day.
That's a question for another time, isn't it? Ask him.
You can tweet us at Wagyu Podcast, soundcloud.com/Wagyu Podcast. We've recently passed over 100,000 followers on there, can you believe? So if we have 100,000 people voting for us, we might be all right. I think some
SoundCloud
of those might be spam, though, I think.
The
website is wearegoingup.co.uk. Is that about it? Is there anything else you want to say before we go? Have I missed anything?
No, I think that's probably about it, isn't
strong
it?
End. Strong end. We'll speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.